Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly using a simple style and limited vocabulary. Today on the show, Ashley Thompson and I report on another U.S. national park. We also hear reports from Ann Ball and John Russell. But first, here is Ashley Thompson with a report on Greenland.
Ocean scientist David Holland calls Greenland the end of the planet. The New York University professor is mostly talking about Greenland's location in the North Atlantic. But in many ways, it is where the planet's future is being written. Holland spoke with the Associated Press during his recent visit to the world's largest island. The ice he was standing on is thousands of years old. It will be gone within 2 years, adding more water to already rising seas around the world. Summer this year is hitting Greenland hard, with record-setting heat and melting ice. By the end of the summer, more than 400 billion metric tons of ice will have melted or broken off from Greenland's huge ice sheet, scientists estimate. That is enough water to cover the nation of Greece, about 35 centimeters deep. Among the most affected places is Helheim, one of Greenland's fastest shrinking glaciers. It sits on the southern edge of the island. It has shrunk 10 kilometers since scientists first measured it in 2005. Many researchers say what is happening is a combination of man-made climate change and natural but strange weather events. Glaciers here always shrink in the summer and grow in the winter. This year is coming near, but not yet passing, the extreme summer of 2012. That is Greenland's worst year in modern history for melting, scientists report. Ruth Mothram is a Danish climate scientist. She said nearly all of the 28 Greenland glaciers she is measuring are shrinking, especially Helheim. At Helheim, the ice, snow, and water seem endless. The only thing that gives a sense of Helheim's massive size is the helicopter carrying Holland and his team. It looks like a small red mark against the glacier's 70-meter-tall ice cliffs. Just next to the cliffs are what remains of Helheim's sea ice, snow, and icebergs. These remnants create a mostly white expanse with a mix of shapes. But in some places, bright blue water forms on the surface. The helicopter's pilot, Martin Norrigard, looks for ice covered with dirt. That tells him the ice is firm enough for the helicopter to land on. Pure white ice could hide a deep hole that would lead to a cold and deadly dive. Holland and his team climb out of the helicopter and set up equipment that lets researchers follow Helheim's movements over time. Such efforts also may help them better understand why salty, warm ocean water attacking the underside of the glacier has been rising to the surface. It takes a really long time to grow an ice sheet, thousands and thousands of years, but they can be broken up or destroyed quite rapidly, Holland said. The small town of Kulusuk is a 40-minute helicopter ride away from Helheim. Mugu Utuak lives in Kulusuk. He says winter weather there used to last as long as 10 months when he was a boy. Now, winter can be as short as 5 months. That matters to Utuak. He is among the top dog sledders in Greenland. And he needs hard ice to race his 23 dogs. People are getting rid of their dogs because there's no season, said another local man, Yulin. He used to run a sled dog team for tourists at a hotel in nearby Tasiilaq, but that is no longer possible. The melting glaciers and warmer weather are noticeable, said Kulusuk Mayor Justice Paulson. The 58-year-old added that his home is much different from his childhood. That is not necessarily a bad thing for Paulson. We like it because we like to have a summer. But scientists like Holland, who study glaciers, see the bigger picture. It is not good news, Holland said. Not for Kulusuk and not for Earth in general. It's kind of nice to have a planet with glaciers around, Holland said.
Nadia Arami made an agreement with the head of her son's school. 7-year-old Mustafa would attend classes at the school, but only if he studies inside a cardboard box. Mustafa Redwan happily accepted the agreement. He knew his mother's idea would silence school officials' worries about his condition. The boy has a rare genetic disorder called xeroderma pigmentosum, or XP. It can make sunlight and other forms of ultraviolet light extremely damaging to the skin and eyes. The disorder is more common in North Africa than in other areas of the world. Now 8, Mustafa has already had 11 operations to remove cancerous growths from his skin. His family is among thousands around the world struggling with XP.
XP affects about 1 in 10,000 people in North Africa. That is more than 10 times the rate in Europe and about 100 times the rate in the United States. Those numbers come from Kenneth Kramer, a researcher at the U.S. National Institutes of Health. People inherit XP from their parents. As a result, the condition is more common in populations where marriage between relatives is high, Kramer said. Affected children inherit 2 copies of a mutated gene, 1 from each parent. A 2016 Moroccan government study estimated that about 15% of marriages in the country are between family members. Fatima El-Fatoiki is a pediatric dermatology specialist at Ibn Rushd University Hospital in Casablanca. She said that living in an area where the sun shines year-round makes people with the disorder more likely to get skin cancers. Without protection, few XP patients in Morocco live long enough to reach adulthood, El-Fatoiki said. Living with the condition is particularly difficult in developing countries and in rural areas, she explained. The truth is, she said, we only have prevention as a possible treatment. these children have to avoid even minimum sun exposure. The main prevention measures include avoiding the sun, wearing protective clothing, and using sunscreen products.
25-year-old Fatima Zahra Balusi has had skin cancer and other problems because of XP. If only people made it easier. Their words hurt. I feel entirely alienated, she said, describing how she faces frightened looks and hateful comments as she passes by people. Her family limits interactions with her, fearful that her condition could spread to others. No one would take care of me, so I had to do it myself, said Balusi, who completed high school. She is now taking university classes. She hopes to find work that will let her help people with the condition. It hurts me that I have to see little kids suffer because of lack of awareness, says Habib Al-Ghazawi. Al-Ghazawi resigned from his position as a veterinarian. He decided to help children with XP after learning that his daughter, Fatima Zahra, had the disorder. Ghazawi leads the Association for Solidarity with Children of the Moon from his house in the town of Muhammadiyah. He spends his time visiting families, giving out donations, and pressuring the government to take action. XP support groups are increasingly sharing advice on the internet and social media. Last year, they held a meeting in London to share practical hints about special clothing, window protections, and meters to measure light, noted NIH researcher Deborah Tamura. The donations from Ghazawi's group reach families like those of Saeed Al-Muhammadi, a tailor in the Moroccan city of Saleh. His 6-year-old daughter has the condition. His family is still debating the issue of schooling. She's sad, but I can't risk taking her to school where there isn't any kind of protection, he said. But she needs an education, said her mother, Maria Al-Maroufi. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Anne Ball.
The state of Minnesota is known as the land of 10,000 lakes. Our national park today protects 4 major ones. The National Park Service says water is the foundation of this wild and remote place. Welcome to Voyageurs National Park. You must have a strong desire to see Voyageurs to make the visit. It is not an easy place to get to. Much of the park is accessible only by boat. The Voyageurs, for whom the park was named, understood this well. Voyageur is a French word meaning traveler.
In the 1700s, French Canadian fur traders started coming to the area seeking beaver fur and other animal coats. The product was in great demand in Europe. The fur traders traveled to and from the area for business. They took canoes to get around. The boat trips were often long and hard. The waters and wild animals created great dangers. Voyageur life became legendary. The men were seen as brave adventurers, but they were also romantics. They became known for singing songs as they navigated the waterways. Of course, the voyagers were not the first people in the area that is now Voyagers National Park. People first arrived there about 10,000 years ago. They were mostly nomadic and did not settle permanently.
In the last 1,000 years, Native American tribes settled in the area, including the Cree, Mansoni, and Assiniboine. The Ojibwa were the residents of more modern times. They served as guides to the fur traders. They also provided canoes and other important items. Voyagers National Park covers almost 88,500 hectares. About half of that surface is water. Creating the park was a long and difficult process. Minnesotan state lawmakers first proposed the idea in 1891. But it was 80 years before Congress established the park. President Richard Nixon signed the bill that finally established Voyagers as a national park in 1971.
The park protects four major Minnesotan lakes: Rainy Lake, Cabotogama, Namekin, and Sand Point. Rainy is the biggest. It covers about 930 square kilometers. It is a popular fishing lake. Fishers may catch walleye, northern pike, and smallmouth bass. In the winter, thick ice covers Rainy Lake. Visitors can walk and drive on it. Rainy Lake meets with Namekin and Cabotogama Lakes at Kettle Falls. A dam was built on the falls in the early 20th century. Along with it came the Kettle Falls Hotel. It housed traders, loggers, and visitors searching for gold in the area. The hotel fell into disuse in more modern times, but in 1987, the National Park Service made repairs and improvements to the building. It is the only indoor place to stay in the area.
Nature and art meet at the Ellsworth Rock Gardens in Voyagers National Park. Park officials describe the gardens as the showplace of Lake Cabotogama. A carpenter and artist from Chicago named Jack Ellsworth built a summer home on the lake in the 1940s. He then designed, built, and cared for the rock gardens over 20 years. The artist also created garden sculptures from native stone. There were once about 200 rock sculptures. Ellsworth stopped caring for the gardens in his older age. When the National Park Service took control of the land, the gardens needed repair and restoration. Today, it is an interesting place to visit within the park.
Voyagers National Park may be best seen at night. Officials there like to say that half of the park comes out after dark. Certainly, much of its magic does. The most spectacular light display on Earth is sometimes visible at Voyagers. The Aurora Borealis, or Northern Lights, appear periodically in the night sky as streaks or clouds of light. The lights are most often white or soft green. However, they sometimes deepen into colors like yellow, red, blue, and even purple. The Northern Lights are not always immediately recognizable, but keep watching. If the light you see comes and goes, or intensifies over time, you may be witnessing the Aurora Borealis.
Along with the Northern Lights, Voyagers is a great place to see meteors. These bursts of light cross the area's black skies mostly in August, during the Perseids meteor shower. Meteors, often called shooting stars, form when pieces of ice and dust cross into Earth's atmosphere and begin to burn brightly. The display of natural fireworks is a great way to finish the day at Voyagers National Park. You can fall asleep under the stars and be sure that more extraordinary nature awaits you when day breaks in Voyagers National Park.
Summer break is ending across the United States as students and teachers return to schools. At U.S. public schools, the amount of money teachers are paid often depends on the state and sometimes the school district in which they teach. First grade teacher Hillary Madrigal used to clean houses as a second job because her teacher's pay was so low. After moving to a new school district where she is paid more, she can buy a car and no longer works as a housekeeper. "I have a college degree," Madrigal told the Associated Press. "I felt I could make a difference in people's lives as a teacher, but to pay my bills, I had to do people's laundry." She now works for the Salt Lake City School District in Utah. The recent national teacher protest movement has persuaded many teachers to demand higher pay and better working conditions in public schools. A shortage of teachers means that many school districts have been forced to deal with the money issue quickly. The National Education Association estimates that the average public school teacher received a 2% pay raise over the past 2 years. That is when the national Red for Ed protest movement began spreading across the country. It involves teachers, students, parents, and community members all pushing for better school conditions and pay for educators. In fact, a new study found that nationwide, support for teacher pay increases is now higher than any point since 2008. The findings appeared in the publication Education Next. The new poll found that among those told current teachers' wages in their state, 56% say teachers' salaries should rise. That represents a 20 percentage point increase over the approval level from just 2 years ago. The number for those expressing support for a pay raise was even higher, 72%, among people who did not know what teachers make now. U.S. school systems have advertised more than 100,000 teaching positions over the last 4 years, notes Elaine Weiss of the Economic Policy Institute. She said that many school budgets had been slow to recover from the last recession. And a stronger economy today means people who may have worked as teachers are choosing better-paying jobs. This has made the teacher shortage worse, Weiss said, and put more pressure on states. Utah, where Madrigal works, has been dealing with a teacher shortage for at least 10 years. Envision Utah, a nonprofit planning agency, says the shortage is expected to get worse as the number of students increases. This means that many school systems compete with each other to find and keep teachers in their classrooms. Outside Sandy, Utah, the Canyons School District started a salary war in April when it raised the starting salary for teachers to $50,000. At least three other school districts quickly followed, offering 4% to 16% pay increases, or offered the higher starting salary. Salt Lake District is one of the largest school systems in Utah. It recently increased the starting salary for teachers to almost $47,000. In Texas, the state legislature approved billions of dollars for teacher pay raises. It is not yet known how this will affect individual schools. If teachers only accept the highest paying jobs, it might make the differences among the school systems even worse. This is already true for the rural Ellensburg School District in the state of Washington. A labor union representing teachers launched protests there during contract talks this past summer. Donna Grazel, the union's president, said comparable school systems pay up to 25% more than Ellensburg. She said the difference has become much greater since a court ordered Washington to give more money to its public schools. State lawmakers are looking at financial models that schools have long depended on, like local taxes, which can be less in rural areas than in wealthy cities. The rural school system then has to compete with nearby districts offering teachers more money. But Ellensburg district officials gave their teachers big raises last year. They said that shows they are trying to make wages more competitive, even with their spending limits.
That's our show for today. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.